This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, just like Leicester City this season. So the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And now for something completely different.
Watch us on YouTube. Listen on your favourite podcast platform. Or ask your smart speaker to play the podcast Leicester Till I Die.
Subscribe, like, follow and join in now.
Strap yourself in.
Because we're set up, switched on and ready to go.
On Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.
Right, Chris.
All right, good evening. How the devil are we all? Well, I hope. Well, say good evening. It could be morning, afternoon, whatever, wherever you are in the world. Welcome along. Thank you for watching. If you are watching on YouTube or Twitch on Leicester Till I Die TV, or if you are listening on our podcast, Leicester Till I Die, on your favourite podcast platform, thank you for lending me your ears. Now, I love this show, The Conversation. I get to speak to... Well, growing up were heroes of mine. I say growing up, most of them are younger than me. I'm so grateful that they give up the time to come and do this. But I never, ever thought that I could say, would meet anybody that could go home and claim, well, he said, these are his words, come to bed tonight, I'm feeling like a stallion. But let's ask him about that. Good evening, Ian. How the devil are you, sir?
Yeah, not too bad, pal. Thanks very much for having me on here.
Brilliant. That is not the accent I was expecting.
I'm even worse now because I've been back over here for 2 years and I was always told I had a bit of a mongrel accent, regardless with the Scottish kind of Scouse Canadian.
Yeah, I know. There's a bit of everything in there, isn't there? So what's it like being a stallion then? Tell it. We've got to clear this up first.
For me, I'm just the coach of stallions. Hey, that's all I'm taking out of it. No, I'm head coach at Woodstock Soccer Club, or Woodstock FC in Ontario, in Canada. Yeah. And we're called Woodstock Stallions. Our females are Woodstock Strikers. Our males are Woodstock Stallions. So it's a name, and it's a bit of a comment that was brought up by one of my senior players a couple seasons ago. And we were on a bit of a run as a team, and we were playing really well and winning games. And he'd said to some of the younger boys in the team, and I say younger, I mean 19, 20 years old, and saying, yeah, "Well, you can go home and tell your missus she's in bed with a stallion tonight." It's a little bit out of the blue, and it caught us all off guard, but it's kind of stuck a little bit.
I'm going to say, does it mean something else in Canada by any chance?
Sorry?
Does it mean something else in Canada?
Oh, no, it's the same thing.
Same, is it? Right?
It's one of those things. It was said tongue in cheek, but it's kind of stuck, and it's kind of, the guys still buzz off it a little bit, and
yeah,
keep being successful and keep going home with wins, I don't mind.
I mean, you're over there in Canada now, and we'll obviously come on to that. But enjoying it, Woodstock FC coaching.
Yeah, it was always tough to stop playing. It's the mentality of a professional footballer. It's a tough thing to get rid of. Missing the change room vibes, missing the banter with players, and just missing the day to days of it. Going into training, going home, whatever, going out for dinner with teammates and families and all that. And it's a tough one to get rid of, especially mentally. And then obviously physically follows. Tough to stay up to it when you're not day to day, but it's good. I'm enjoying coaching. It's what I've always wanted to do. When I have to be a part of the game. I'm one of those football geeks who I watch everything. I play as much as my body allows me to, and I enjoy passing on whatever wisdom I may have. And if not wisdom, like work ethic and mentality. And that's something that's, it needs driven into a lot of people over here, players, like young players especially.
Yeah.
They do it for fun, and it's good. But to try and get themselves to that next level that they're expecting, they need to flip their mentality a bit. And that's something that I take quite a bit of pride in.
Good, good. And we talked, obviously, briefly before we came live. And you're Canadian international. 40-odd games for Canada, six goals there. Do they look at you? And because we always say this, don't we, with some of the coaches, if they haven't had success, they don't always get the respect.
Yeah.
I would imagine, having been an international for Canada, that you don't have that problem.
No. It's one of those things. It's something that I know needs worked on a lot with a lot of, especially parents in grassroots football around the world, not just in Canada and the UK. Respect for coaches, regardless of their upbringing. A lot of them are volunteers, and they're doing it for nothing. But with me, I've come in here, obviously, I took over as a coach beforehand because, obviously, COVID, it was a tougher one for me to come in and do the job I'm doing now.
Yeah.
So I just came in initially as a coach, and that obviously expanded a little bit into being the head coach of the club and head of coaches and head of the men's program. Mm-hmm. And I've had, in fairness, nothing but respect from players and coaches around and teams we're playing against. Like, I get the utmost respect from them when I do like Zoom meetings with AGM meetings and whatever. It's, you go in and there's a respect level there, and it's, I don't expect it because I don't go in and right away say, you know who I am. I'm not that. I go in and I'm doing my job while they're doing theirs, but they understand what I've done and I don't have to tell them, and they respect it that way. And that's something that's, it's kind of refreshing because I'm a lot younger than majority of them.
Yeah. Say good evening to Nate. He's from your side of the pond, but he's with the North. But good news. What time is it over there? It must be.
It's 4:05.
4:05. Yeah. So good afternoon to Nate then. Welcome along. I'm gonna say, I mean, like you say, you know, you alluded to your Scottish roots there. Where did the Canadian, was it sort of grandparents?
No, well, my grandparents moved over, I want to say late 60s, just for a couple of years. I don't know. I can't remember the reasoning. They moved over. My mom at the time moved over. This was before she was with my dad. And my sister, so I have two sisters from a previous marriage that were, one of them was born in Canada.
Right.
Then my mom moved back to the UK and my other sister was born. Then she met my dad and me and my brother were born in Scotland. And then we moved back over here. My dad got a good job offer and it was one of those he couldn't really say no to. So we moved over here in 85, I believe. I was a year and a half when I moved over here.
Right, right. Hello to Leon. Yeah, he has he and Hume. What a speedy player. And we're going to get a lot of this tonight. And I don't, I can't say I am surprised. And we will obviously come back to sort of your starting football. But you've got to say, Hume. I mean, I remember a while ago, you did a thing for me when I did a section on the website called My Favourite Things. And I cannot imagine as a fan what it's like to have your name just shouted out in any way when you're on a football pitch.
I was, to be fair, my first game that I played, I think I'm pretty sure it was against Chef Wed at the Walkers at the time. Yeah. And my parents came over for it and they started cheering. And my parents were wondering what the hell I'd done wrong already. Why they're booing? They're like, he's only been on the pitch for like 8 minutes. Like, why are they booing? I actually think I hit the post, like one of my first touches for the club.
Yeah.
All dropped and I hit the post and it went, came out again and they started, my parents were like, what the hell's going on? Like, has he done something against the club before? And to be honest, I was like, it stuck and I loved it because I knew, and in fairness, if I had a crap game, they were doing it.
No, I say I do remember those days. Do remember those days. But like I say, you're born in Scotland. You're a big fan of Liverpool, but you started work. You know, your first team was through the youth ranks at Tranmere.
Yeah, I'd had a couple other offers prior. I came over on trial when I was 13 with St Mirren, and oddly, did really really well. And not blow my own trumpet, I was training with like under 18s, and then I trained with the full team at 13 years old, which was insane. And they promised me the world and custard pied me. And then the year later, I came over when I was 14 with Hearts, which would have been my dream, because obviously being from Edinburgh, my parents, big Hearts fans, my family are still season ticket holders. And again, I had a couple trials set up with like York and Hartlepool and Hearts all in 3 weeks. And I did my first week at Hearts and did so well, they asked me to hang out for the next 2 weeks. So I cancelled the other ones. Called up, thanked them for the interest. And at 14 years old, to get an offer to play for Hearts would have been a dream.
Yeah.
And again, they pied me. I played in the 16 team. Two games in the under 16 team. I think I scored 3 or 4 goals. Did really well. Trained with the under 18s and trained with Craig Gordon and all them. That was the age group level.
Yeah.
And then again, same thing. They pulled the carpet out and just left me hanging. And I took a chance the year later when I was 15. It was kind of third time's a charm and came over with a select team from Toronto area.
Yeah.
And we played against England schoolboys, Everton, and then Tranmere, and did well. All the like Newcastle scout was out watching me, and he liked watching me play. Just thought, was hoping I'd grow up a bit because I was really small, really slim. Then Everton were the same, but they're like, we don't need a striker in that position or in that style of play. Mm-hmm. And then lo and behold, a couple of years later, they come out with possibly the best English player ever. So I was kind of, one of those, no worries. And Tranmere, I played against them. It was against their under 18s and I was 15 and with my UK passport, and they didn't think I'd have my passport first and foremost. They didn't think I was only 15. They thought I was 18. And when the coach told them, they rushed to get me over on trial, and they'd already called my parents in Canada before I even got back to Canada. So it came over that year and did really well. And the rest is history. I came over when I was just before my 16th birthday and joined the youth team and went on to some good things and was
definitely.
I loved it at that club, and it was just a lot of fun, to be honest.
I mean, St Mirren, I mean, you know, we have the ties with St Mirren with a certain Riyad Mahrez not getting on there or getting on well there either. Although he did have to sneak out on a bike, I think the story goes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a story. I mean, you know, we have the story of Jamie Vardy, which I had a discussion. I'll just say a quick hello to Dan, Turf Moorhouse TV. What a player. Would have loved you in claret and blue. He's a Burnley fan, but
I know. I'm surprised he's saying good things about me.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, I'm surprised he says good things about anybody. Hello, Dan. How you doing? But no, I was having this conversation with the Spurs fan the other day about whether Jamie Vardy will be remembered longer than Harry Kane, and you know, it's the story of Jamie Vardy not giving up, and that sounds very similar with yourself. You know, you were determined to give it a go. You got knocked back a couple of times, and then, you know, your perseverance paid off.
Yeah, it's something that was kind of, and when I say drummed into me, it wasn't by my parents. It was it was my love. I left school at 15 years old, to my detriment now. I'm not undereducated on piece of paper, I am, but I can be quite clever sometimes.
There you're talking to somebody exactly the same. I left with two O levels, art and maths, and I ended up using computers.
Well, that's it. Like, I knew what I wanted to do, and
yeah,
it was in Canada. We didn't have pathways to playing. We had a pro league, which was kind of semi pro with Toronto Lynx and Montreal Impact and whatnot back then. And then we had university. So did I want to stay in school and play local soccer football for the next 4 years and then possibly go to university, or do I want to take a chance? And for me, it was a no-brainer. Having the UK upbringing, it was the mentality of my parents and my family and all that was I wanted to get involved in the UK and playing. So that was my choice. That was – it's a – try until you die kind of thing. And it kind of resonated a lot more as I got older, and I put it into the way I played, and I put it into the way I approached everything. And that's, I'm hoping majority, if not all Leicester fans remember that part of me, even though it was kind of dark days. I gave everybody everything I had.
Well, I definitely remember. I mean, it was, you know, wasn't sort of the best of times, but every club, you know, goes through it, don't they? Just so everybody's interested, Manchester City have just scored a third against Arsenal, so that's going to open the title race up. I have actually got a Toronto FC shirt as well. I should have put that on tonight, shouldn't I?
Yeah. Oh, I prefer, I'm not going to lie, I prefer that top you've got on, because I actually
yeah, well said. Well said, like that.
Toronto FC took a punt on me when they had the opportunity, and
I'm glad I didn't wear it then.
Oh, I don't have any hard feelings. It's just I wish I'd had a chance to play over here.
Yes, but yeah. And at that point, though, I mean, Tranmere, in fairness, weren't a bad side.
We were a very good side. We were very young. And hence the reason why we continued to do what we did in the FA Cup and obviously the Worthington Cup at the time. That was my first season there. So when we played the Worthington Cup against you guys and Matt Elliott.
Were you in that Tranmere team?
I made my debut that year. Right. So I was on the bench against Middlesbrough in the quarterfinals, I want to say it was.
Right.
We beat them 2-1, and Andy Parkinson scored possibly one of the best goals I've seen at Prenton Park. And I was on the bench there absolutely cacking myself because we went 2-0 up and John Aldridge asked me to warm up. And I'd never been involved in the first team at all. I think I've trained with them like twice.
Wow.
So that was many, many moons ago. And that was my first year. And we continued to do it year after year in the FA Cup and in now the, what's it called now? Carabao Cup.
Carabao Cup. Yes. Yeah,
changing it, sponsor names all the time. It drives me nuts, but.
Hey, I can remember the Milk Cup and, I can even go as far back as the Rumbelows Cup. That's how far back I'm going.
That's it. That was we were really good, really young. A lot of players came through our system at Tranmere. Mm. We had, at one point, we had something like 7 or 8 players who came through the youth team playing. And that was, it was unheard of, and it was phenomenal at the time. And we were a selling club, unfortunately. Mm. And that's continually, we were seeing players leave.
And did you, I'm just trying to search then, did you get on in the final at all?
No, I wasn't involved then. I was only in the quarterfinal that year. I made my debut after the final. I was there. I was a part of the squad. I was suited and booted and all that. But I was part of the 23 players or whatever that were in it. But I was nowhere near the match day.
Can I say that I'm glad you weren't, because the result might have been different.
Yeah, I was but a baby back then. It was I don't know how I'd have dealt with Big Jerry Taggart and Matt Elliott. I think think Tags would have put me in the stand.
They didn't used to take prisoners, them two, no, did they?
You know? Not at all.
we have Jerry on occasionally on the channel, and we love him because he won. Well, after he'd left Leicester, he collided into Dennis Wise and nearly strangled him. So we love him for that. We love him for that.
Tags was there as a coach when I was still at the club, and he was quality. He was always getting involved in training, and he was a character, to say the least.
Yes, yeah. Daniel says here, how can you not like a man who scores? Let's say he scores goal for me on Football Manager.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was a good utility player on Football Manager back then.
I wonder how many players are bored because of the Football Manager or FIFA stats, you know. But no, I mean, that was weird for me, because that was the last final, League Cup final at the old Wembley. I managed to I was working at Blackburn Rovers of all places at the time. Sorry, Dan. Sorry. And I went, and it was weird because, and no disrespect to Tranmere, but of course we were the Premier League side. I think you were second tier at that time, and we were favourites, and it was weird being in that position because we're always used to being the underdogs.
Yeah, it was, to be honest, it was an incredible atmosphere. Like, Tranmere filled their end without problem.
Yeah.
And it was at a time where Tranmere was getting 16,500 every game, especially leading up to that point in the season with the cup runs and everything. And it was just a surreal atmosphere for me. And I just thought it could have gone anyway. Like, I know Leicester were obviously the better team, but with how cup games went for Tranmere that year.
I mean, you can never say, I mean, cup games are cup games, aren't they? And, you know, David Kelly came back to haunt us and deservedly got the equaliser. But you broke through the following year then at Tranmere.
Yeah. So that season I made my debut. So I played 3 sub appearances at the end of that year. And then, to be honest, the year after was a bit slower. It was I made like, I think it was 15 appearances or 14 appearances that second season. Mm. And it was a bit discouraging a little bit because I'd made my debut the year before and then it kind of plateaued. The big one for me was the year after that, where I just started playing a lot more often. I think I played something like 30-odd games my third year. And I started scoring a couple goals here and there. And I think that's kind of where I grew into being an adult in a way. Yeah. I was what, 18, and I just started growing and learning my game, and with the senior pros that were around me was just helping me no end. And the next two and a half years after that, prior to my move to Leicester, I just continued to go up in standards and set standards for myself, set standards for me by coaches and other players, and it really helped me. And that was pivotal in my career because it got me really understanding where I wanted to be. And I tried to push to as high as I possibly could. Unfortunately, things didn't go much higher. But it's for me, still a very good level. And I wish I'd have got higher, and I'm not going to lie about that.
No.
But a couple of things happened in my career that probably stopped that. But it is what it is, and I'm immensely proud of how things pushed on year after year.
I think you know there's a lot of players out there that would have loved to have got up to that level. So yes, I think it's a very good level to be at. I mean, 149 games for Tranmere, and bear with me if I'm wrong, because like you say, you can never trust Wikipedia. But yeah. 32 goals. You scored 33 for Leicester in less games, so glad to see that. And I always say this to people. Do you remember your first goal, and what was that feeling like to get, to get as a striker to get on the score sheet?
First goal for who? I remember them all.
Tranmere, sorry.
First goal for Tranmere was a front post header against Peterborough, and Gareth Roberts whipped it in from the right wing, whipped it in swinger, got across the front post header, went mental as I do every time I score. Yeah. But yeah, no, thoroughly enjoyed it, and that's what I'm there for. Is I'll only get remembered for goals. Regardless, there's a lot of people, and strikers, unfortunately, doesn't matter how hard you run, how much kilometers you go through in a game, and how many good touches you have, if you miss chance after chance, you'll be remembered for that.
You will.
The same thing going on right now with Darwin Núñez at Liverpool.
Oh, yes.
The guy's working so hard for the team, and he's doing so many good things, but misses chances, and people just harp on about it. And I was like that for the start. At the beginning of my time with Tranmere, that's what I was like. I was learning how to become more complete. And I was doing hard work for everybody, and they were doing hard work for me, but I wasn't getting goals. So going into that second and third and fourth season there is when I really started to add that in.
Yeah.
And I remember my first goal at Leicester as well. Derby away, Pride Park.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you're instant hero against Derby. I just want to say, I'm going to ask about the Leicester move in a second, but just very interested in what you were saying then about being a striker. I mean, at the moment, we have Kelechi Iheanacho that we absolutely love as a player. He struggled to get game time, and I think anybody would that had come through when Jamie Vardy's being Jamie Vardy, it was always going to be trouble for anybody. But he was only ever getting sort of 10, 15 minute, what's the word I'm looking for? Appearances, at the end of games. And then I think it was a couple of seasons ago, he had, due to injury, was played up front with Jamie, and he ended up being the club's top scorer. Then he was dropped again, and now he's getting another bit of a run in. And I think Jamie's coming towards the end of his career. He's obviously scoring. He likes scoring in the FA Cup anyway, but he's, scoring away. As a striker, do you need, because this has always been my argument, do you need that regular game time? Because I see that if you're playing bit parts here and bit parts there, you're never going to get settled into a rhythm of being able to score.
Yeah, it's kind of circumstantial, though. If you're Iheanacho coming in and you're behind Jamie Vardy, it's tough, especially when Vardy's scoring goals. Yeah. So you can't even go in and knock on the door and say, listen, I need to be playing.
Yeah.
So you get your head around being that cameo player. One of the most famous for that in the history of football is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Could he really go and knock on the door and say, I want to play before Andy Cole and Dwight York? No. But he knew when he had to come on, or when he got the chance to come on, he had to make an impact. So you do kind of get your head around it. Like, it happened a lot with me in my time. So when I was there at Leicester with Matty Fryett, you had the likes of DJ Campbell, Elvis Hammond. You had guys, Mark De Vries. These guys couldn't get in because we were playing well. Scoring goals, one of us was scoring goals here and there, but they couldn't get in the game. So when they did get in, they had to make sure they did something. And it happened with me towards the end of my time there. When I wasn't playing, you had Stevie Howard, or you had Barry Hales, or you had Carl Court at the time. And these things, I couldn't get in. And then I'd come in and I'd do whatever I could. And everyone wants to play. Everyone always wants to play. And if they don't, they're in the wrong job.
Yes.
If you're accepting of being a bit part, you're literally in it for the money. And I'm sorry, I have no time for that.
No, I agree. Signed deadline day in August 2005 by Craig Levein, which probably as soon as you say that name, Leicester fans tend to reel in disappointment. And to be honest, it was a difficult period because I think anybody coming in at that time would have struggled. You know, I mean, Ian Holloway ended up, and we'll come on to him later, but he ended up as being the manager that took us down. But we know he's not a bad man because he took Blackpool up the next season to the Premier League. Exactly. It was a club that needed a good share. And probably going down actually helped us in a funny way. But I do believe that, well, I do, I don't believe, I know, because my son has got a shirt with, well, it's that black shirt. I don't know if you can see the black one on the left, the number 9. Your signature is on there because my son was a ball boy back in the days when there was only one ball boy per team. Mascot, sorry, mascot, not ball boy. One mascot per team away at Burnley. And Craig Levine, lovely guy. And they always are when you talk to them, sort of, you know, and they're not doing, you know, or you're not losing games. But how did that move come about? Because it was, like you say, transfer deadline day, wasn't it?
It was madness because it was really, really last minute because there was Preston were in at the time. And that's all I'd heard and all my agent had heard was I was doing well for Tranmere. I'd finished the season prior when we got to the FA Cup quarterfinals and we did really well and I made a name for myself. And it got to the start in the next season and Brian Little came in to me. He's like, listen, there's teams after you. He goes, I'd love you to stay. He goes, but if we get over X amount, we've got to let you go for money. So I'm like, that's not an issue. I said, I obviously want to continue playing here, but if it's the right move, I'll accept that and I'll move on. So it was literally deadline day or it was actually the night before deadline day. And all I'd heard was Preston this, Preston that, and they offered and got declined and offered and got declined. And I had the last day of training. And Brian Little comes out to me halfway through the training session and says, Hume, you got to go. I said, we've accepted a bid from you. So I'm like, what? From Preston? They finally accepted? He goes, no, Leicester City. I'm like, oh, crap, okay. So call my agent. He's like, okay, well, I'm because my agent lived in London at the time.
Right.
My agent's like, okay, well, I'll meet you there. And he called me and he was going through the whole reasoning why they didn't accept Preston's offer. And then I have David Kelly on the phone because he was assistant coach at Preston at the time saying, what the hell is going on? I said, I have no idea. Like, I'm genuinely, like, this is the first time I've ever been a part of a transfer kind of tug of war.
Yeah.
And he's like, they're not accepting anything. You need to get onto the chairman and get her to sort it out. So called my agent back. We went through all that and they're like, no, we're not accepting that. We've accepted Leicester's. So I'm racing down the M6 to get to Stoke to come across. And again, David Kelly on the phone saying, what the hell's going on? Why aren't they accepting? This is bollocks. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
And it would have been ideal for me because it was more local.
Yes.
And at the time, that's when they were pushing, they were getting playoffs every year. And obviously, was it David Connolly just moved to Wigan, was it?
Yes.
And Craig Levine called my agent and said, listen, we want him in. We've got him in, or we're looking at a younger version to come in and replace Connolly. Mm. So I'm like, oh crap, no pressure. No. I just continued down the road and met with Craig Levine. And for me, it was awesome because he was a hero of mine, being a Hearts.
Of course. And he'd done well at Hearts, in fact.
He did. He was massive for us. Yeah. And I always watched him, and it was nice to meet him and everything. And that kind of turned sour later on, but now by the time I got there and we went to one of the Bupa hospitals or something like that to do my medical and I think it was one like near Market Harbor somewhere, and went in there, met up with the doctor, my agent, and did everything kind of microwave medical, just your legs are there, your hips are there. Because we literally had maybe, I think it was about 2 hours before the deadline closed. So we rushed through, made sure everything was fine, quick heart scan or whatever, what are they called? The ECGs.
Yeah.
To make sure I was living. and kind of went back to the, met up at Walker, signed the contracts and had it done. And right after that, I get a phone call from David Kelly. They've accepted an offer. I'm like, that's not working. I said, I'm in Leicester. I said, sorry, but next time. And then in fairness, they ended up going and signing Dave Nugent and Chris Sedgwick. Yeah. So that kind of worked out for them because Nuge went on to play for England. So it's like you won the battle there. You signed two lads for less money.
I think it was, well, I'm just reading here, £500,000, £500,000, that could have risen up to $750,000.
Yeah,
that was a lot of money to get on. I mean, obviously, we certainly got our money's worth. Was there any pressure on that?
Not when I say the thing is, it's everywhere. So even if I was staying at Tranmere, there's pressure every game.
Yeah.
So going to a club like Leicester, it was like seeing the training facility and seeing the stadium and that and comparing it to what I was used to, it was black and white. So that kind of pressure was there. Mm. The pressure for me was living up to what Danny Tiasso and Momo Sylla and Rab Douglas and Dion Dublin and Nisa Johansson and what these guys were used to and what they expected. That was the pressure for me, not pressure from the fans, because I was doing exactly what I wanted to do. And I was playing at a level that was higher than what I was used to.
Yeah.
So you need to test yourself to get better. And I obviously did that at Leicester. And I just buzzed off it. It was just an incredible move for me. And I think the fact that Leicester were in a rebuild and getting rid of a lot of the big names, a lot of the wages off the bill.
Yeah.
It's crazy when you see what players are making in the Championship now compared to what we were back then. It's astronomical. Guys driving around in Bentleys and Aston Martins and all that. And
they all play for Burnley, I'll tell you.
Hey, but I was happy. Well, I was a little bit embarrassed, but I was happy driving into the training facility in my Vauxhall Astra. I was like, okay, yeah.
Hey, don't be knocking an Astra. I love an Astra.
Hey, that was one of the best drives I ever had. But
yeah, I'm the same.
Next to a Range Rover and a Bentley, I'm like, I called my wife right after and said, listen, I got to change cars.
I mean, it was turbulent years, like we say, at Leicester. I mean, you were there, I think, well, you were there from 2004, you left in 2008, and you had Levine, followed by Kelly, followed by Nigel Worthington, followed by Martin Allen, followed by Gary Megson, Ian Holloway. I mean, you must have gone in training every Monday morning thinking, who's in charge this week?
Yeah, it was madness. And listen, that was on us. I know that. It's tough to accept, but these things wouldn't have happened if we were performing. And some, you'd have individuals do it one week and then the others would do it the next week. And we never really put together, in the three seasons I was there, we never really put together good strings of results until the end of the season when our asses were on the line.
Yeah.
And that's the crazy thing is when you look at it on paper, even the year we went down on paper, our team was ridiculous in comparisons to a lot of teams in the Championship.
Yeah.
I think too many people blame, and this is players alike, too many people blame the manager. At the end of the day, we're the ones who go on. You set us up, we go on, and we don't provide the results that we need. And we needed a lot more accountability, and we had too many people who shirked that. And that's whether it was because we had young players coming through or too many young players, or we had too many guys coming in on loan or too many guys coming in for money or what. We just shirked too much accountability, and that ultimately is what put us down. And as sad as we all were, like, it was heartbreaking, that last game at Stoke. It should never come to that. Should never have. And I, for one, I always gave everything I had, but I'm not clear of blame either. And I accept that. And it's tough. It's tough to look back on those days.
It is, but I mean, this is, I'm not saying, you know, you're wrong, but I always look at the manager and thinking, especially these days, the managers are quite often are on as much as the players. And it's the managers that pick the players. It's the managers that set the tactics out. And it's the same in any job. You know, if you're in sales, if you're not performing, it's for the manager to make those decisions about changing things around. And the book stops with them, as they say. But I mean, that was at the time. I mean, I think we had, financially we were struggling. We had Milan Mandrić come in, who signed my other shirt, which is not up yet, is going up this week. Remember watching you at a game against away at Accrington in the League Cup under Martin Allen. I mean, you had a few different ones there. I've got to ask you about, well, Rob Kelly, everybody loved us there, and he kept us up that season. Nigel Worthington was only ever there, I think, as a caretaker.
Very good coach, by the way. Very good manager. And I wish they'd have kept Nigel.
I can say as a fan, I wish they had done.
It was so hard. I'm not going to lie. His training was so intense. And the work we had to do, it was different to what we were used to. Yeah. And when he came in the first session, he's like, okay, everybody outside gets on the whistle and we're instant run. Like, yeah. And I hate running, so I'm not going to lie. Like, I hate doing running. Unless you put me on a pitch,
yeah,
I hate running with a passion. And I've never denied it. As soon as I'm on a pitch, it's different. But then as soon as he started putting in the stats for games and this and that, and we got the pro zone in and we spent thousands and thousands of pounds to put in this pro zone, and these different managers, statistics took over football. And if you didn't run 10K, you didn't do enough. If you were this position, you didn't run 8K, it wasn't enough. Nigel Worthington came in and he's like, bollocks to that. Like, let's just go out and work hard. You walk off the field knowing you gave everything, we'll get the result we deserve. And we started doing it. And then we changed the season. and then we changed it.
Yeah, he did like to go through his managers, old Milan, didn't he? And like I say, I think everybody at the end of that season would have. Cause I don't know if he came from Norwich or he went to Norwich, but it was a shame. I think that was sort of one of those ones that got away.
Yeah, Northern Ireland job after that season.
Ah, that was it. Yes, indeed. And of course, from outside, it looked like chalk and cheese with the guy that came in, Martin Allen.
Yeah. Listen, I can't say a bad thing about Martin. He was actually a very good character, and he was the issue we had that season, and you can't even beat around the bush with it, was dodgy bringings in. Like, there was too many players who came in on stupid amounts of money. Like, no disrespect to them. You get offered a contract, you come in and take it. But players that were on like two and three times as much money as the likes of me, Matty Fryett, Gareth McCauley, like these things shouldn't happen at clubs like that. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be bringing in somebody because well, this guy was great on a video. No. Well, if you haven't seen him play, like, don't. And that was our biggest issue that year, was we had far too many people brought in. Loans, unknown transfers, and not saying they didn't do well where they were, but unknown transfers who come into a game or into a league where we didn't need that type of player.
Yeah.
It was that was our biggest downfall that year. And Martin, in fairness to him and Adrian Whitbread were actually top guys, and they changed things around. It was getting rid of that big I am mentality of players, and he did change it. But I, like I said, there was far too many, like, the revolving door was there constantly, and it was going. You didn't know who was coming in.
I mean, it was. I don't know. I think it was left side. They said we almost had a team of left-sided midfielders on their own. There was that many coming in. Yeah. And, of course, you look at it, and it's easy to look back and say and blame Martin Allen. But I think in hindsight, they were all his side. Well, we know, obviously, one of them wasn't his signing, or wasn't going to be his signing. And I'm just looking at the team there. I mean, It must have looked like a scene out of Zulu when you all went on the training pitch, when the Zulus are coming over towards Walk's Drift. I mean, there's a hell of a lot.
Yeah, there was just far too many. And, like, no disrespect to him, young Hossein came in, Kaibi, and he never got a sniff. And the guy's playing in World Cup qualifiers. But he came in on massive money and never got a look in. We had Sergio Hellings came in, the guy, great guy, never got a sniff. He was the next big thing out of out of Dutch football, and he played at Anderlecht, and they're like, oh my God, this kid's amazing. Never really got a sniff. Mm. Like it was an odd one. Then you had Sean Newton came in. You had Jimmy Nielsen came in, hardly played, if he maybe played a cup game. And again, these guys are coming in on huge money. And we're like, well, it wasn't broke at the end of last season. We needed a tweak. And he came in and completely reinvented the wheel. And it was, or tried to reinvent the wheel, and that wheel well and truly broke. And it ended up being a problem.
And I think you only have to look at when Claudio took over from Nigel. He did not come in and that season make a lot of changes. It was just a tweak here and a tweak there. And I'm just trying to Google. I've forgotten. You remember who was the player that? I can see him. I can see his face. That Milan wanted and Martin didn't. Oh,
did he come in?
No. Apparently, he was sent home from out. He was sat in the lobby at what was then the Walkers, and it was a Milan signing, and Martin didn't want him.
Where was he coming from?
It was an ex Chelsea player. I can't remember. I'm just seeing here. It's going to annoy me that. Until the end, but
somebody will pop up on the comments with the answer for you.
Somebody will, hopefully. Somebody will. Martin Ann, great guy, as I say, up at Accrington. I was there with my son because I lived in Burnley at the time. Mm-hmm. And Martin Allen was stood at the side watching, you know, the warm up. And we looked at it, and he went, my son said, well, why has he done that? When we looked, you know, the team was announced. I said, I don't know, go and ask him. And he's like, I can't do that. I can't do it. I said, he stood there. What worst he can do is tell you to book her off, sort of thing. And he went over, and he spent about 15 minutes with my son explaining his tactics. I mean, if it was a good job, he wasn't a spy for Accrington Stanley. And it made my son's just total and utter day, you know, the fact that, you know.
He was very talkative and very approachable. Like, that was the first thing he did when he came in, is he had a team barbecue at the training ground with all the wives and girlfriends and kids and everything, just so that everyone understood they were welcome. And it was...
Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, he's just come back to me.
Like, that would have been a weird one. Like, we already had like 5-6 strikers.
Yeah.
And it was like, but then you bring in like Bruno Ngoti, who Bruno was awesome. He was a great guy. And for what he'd done, but he brought him in on massive money. And then you bring in DJ Campbell. Yes. Like, DJ Campbell was on like 3 times the amount of money, if not more, than me and Matt.
I felt a shiver go down my back then when you said that.
No, but the thing is, DJ was an amazing goal scorer.
Mm.
But at the time, it wasn't something we needed. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't an instant, we need this, let's get him in. But it was frustrating and demoralizing for the likes of myself and Matty. Matty went on to bigger and better things and banging 30 goals the following year and making the money that he deserved before his injuries. But at the time, they're bringing in players on, like I said, 3 and 4 times as much money as us regulars who were playing. So that was very demoralizing for us. And we didn't know how to take it. And we're like, well, like, how do you want us to approach this? We're getting good, paid decent money.
Mm.
But it's also hurts when you've got these guys coming in and sitting behind us, just not bothered raking in the money. Totally. And DJ was a good player, and he ended up going on to prove it at Blackpool. But for us, did we have to throw money at him? I didn't think so. Could have been spent elsewhere.
Yeah. I think as well, we went through a period where we bought a lot of players that were names, if you like, that end of the career, no disrespect to them, when at the peak they would never have considered coming to Leicester. I've got to say, were you there when obviously there was the infamous incident, and thankfully he was fine? Was it Clark Carlisle who had the heart attack?
I was sat right next to him. It was me, Clarky, and Darren Kenton. So we were sat at halftime. Listen, we were getting our asses kicked. It was an absolute beating that first half at Forest.
Yeah.
And we were lucky it was only 1-0. and came off, and everyone he's like comes in, goes, everyone calm down, relax, have a drink, we'll talk in a minute. So we sat down, and Kent was sat, I was sat, and then Clark in the middle, and he just went kind of like head down like that, and we just thought he was ticked off with the half, head down, and next thing you know, he goes to keel over, and Darren or Kent caught him just before he hit the floor. So he would have face planted the floor, and you never know what could have happened then.
No.
Kent's just caught him right before he hit the floor. Physios came in and kept him alive. That was the craziest 15, 20 minutes of my life in football. That was.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Away days are great, but when you can't play away, there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus. Serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
That was mental. And thankfully, Dave Rennie and Tom Freeman, the two physios at the time, were as adequately set up and educated as much as they were, because they saved his life. And
thank God, yes.
He was literally the color of your shirt when we were in the change room.
Wow.
And they that's when they changed all the protocols. All the protocols for the defibs, they're supposed to be every, I think it's every 60 feet in a stadium or every 100 feet in a stadium, whereas Forest were on the far corner from where the change rooms were. So that's where their St. John's ambulance was. So rather than having one around the change rooms and having the ambulance around the change rooms, they're on the opposite diagonal corner where the away fans were. And they had to get that over. It took almost 10, 15 minutes.
Oh,
and if
God.
It wasn't for Tom and Dave, Clark would have been, and horrible to say it, but thankfully he's all right now, but he would have been dead. It wasn't even a question. And it was scary times. Like it's.
Oh God. Yeah.
A lot of it now, but back then you didn't hear a lot of stuff like that. And for that to happen was just freakishly scary. And thankfully those two guys were there.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, because a lot of rumours at the time were that it was brought on because Martin Allen was given the verbals out, but it doesn't sound like that was the case at all.
No, not yet. He did have a go at us, rightfully, but then said, all right, let's settle down. Let's everyone have a drink. We'll have a talk in a minute. Yeah. And then that was it. And they asked us if we wanted the game off, and the guys were like, honestly, like, that's why when we did have the replay, we gave them the goal to start. We knew we were behind, but nobody was in the right frame of mind, and it was
totally, you know, understand. And like you say, it's, you know, it's bad whenever it happens, but for it to be sat next to you, and fair play to Nottingham for allowing the game to be cancelled. And like you say, we did have then the amazing sight of watching the goalkeeper run the whole length of the field and put the ball in, which I think was morally the right thing to do.
Well, we decided who was Martin Allen decided who was scoring, because you know what football's like. Unfortunately, people in and around the game, if you get told, well, we're giving you a goal before the game, then people will lump a bet on somebody and they'll give it to whoever and they'll go and do it.
Yeah.
So Martin said right before the game, he goes, okay, well, we're going to give you guys a goal. We're going to start out 1-0 down, but I'll decide right before kickoff who's going to score.
What was it, Martin or Gary Megson that was in control? I think it was Gary Megson.
Well, it might have been, Yeah.
Who didn't stay very long. I mean, again, he seemed to come in and suddenly things were turning around and he seemed to tighten it up at the back and then skedaddled off to Bolton in the Premier League. I mean... Yeah.
There's your answer.
Well, exactly. And I've got this, I mean, yeah, I always say, what would I do in that situation? And I guess, to be honest with you, it might well be the same. I don't know. But you'd think about it, certainly. But what was Milan thinking of not tying him down to a contract?
From what I remember, he had him on till the end of the year.
Right.
But if a team from the Premier League came in, he was allowed to speak. I may be absolutely throwing rubbish in the air there, but I think that's what it was, and it's one of those things you can't really stand in his way because he might just quit. Contracts, especially if it's a short term contract.
Talking about Nottingham Forest, it's almost like they can hear through the ripples, isn't it? We get Luke in the True Red. Good evening. We were just talking, Luke, about the game when we gave you a 1-0 start and you still went on to us. So, I thought you didn't mean to say that bit at the end. But Gary didn't go. And then Ian Holloway came in, and I've got to be honest with you, I like the guy. I do again. He was their manager when my other son was mascot at the away game at Burnley. He wanted to come, and that was the thing. You know, he was so desperate to come that he was on gardening leave, I think, at Plymouth. But I think we were just doomed by then, weren't we? You know, we were already there.
It's an odd one because when he came in, and I don't say this with any disrespect, I think they gave him too much.
Right.
Like, he came in, and in the January transfer window, they said, here's your coffers. Go and do with it what you please. But if you want to bring players in, we have to get players out. And I can't remember what the figure was. I don't know if it was like 5 mil. He came in and gave him 5 million and goes, listen, you need to get guys off the books. You need to get players in. And he had ideas of who he wanted, who he brought in. Like, for me, right away, Stevie Howard and Matty Oakley were perfect signings. Even if, like, Stevie coming in hindered my playing time sometimes. He was a player who just got promoted with Derby. He was him and Matty both done it. They both got up there. They both knew what it was like. And they were the types of characters who you kind of want to grind out points. But the issue was he had to get rid of loads of players, and then he's doing this and bringing these guys in from, well, essentially Premier League clubs in Derby at the time. And I think they'd just been relegated and they were still on big money and whatever. So he had to give them massive money. And I think it was just if Ian could have come in and maybe got a couple people off the books, I think he'd have got us to stay up.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't have had to fill the voids of players that he's trying to get rid of. And we'd have had the same kind of mentality going through and the same people fighting for each other.
Yeah.
Again, more change happening. And I actually wish he'd have stayed after we got relegated.
Yeah, I always say it was to me it was possibly the right manager, but just unfortunately the wrong time.
Yeah, exactly.
And he had the players, and did he not end up playing you on the wing at some point?
Well, Martin Allen played me right wing for the most points because he had DJ and all that, and then I started going up front after Megson. Or with Megson. But Ollie played me wherever he could. And in fairness, I played left wing, right wing up front. It didn't really bother me. When I was scoring goals, when me and Matty were the partnership up front, you couldn't play me anywhere but up front because we had a chemistry, which was, it's something, okay, we didn't score 40 goals each, but we were constant threats and we worked for each other and we were great friends off the field. So that helped because we'd hammer each other on the field and then each other a cuddle and all that. Like, it was one of those. So we had that success, and that's what a lot of managers, you can't buy.
No.
That's where I think if it wasn't for that, and I'm not putting it just on us, it was a team thing, but
yeah,
if it wasn't for our friendship as people off the field, I think the first year I was there when we were fighting relegation, I think it might not have gone that way. But
it wasn't the biggest strike partnership going, was it?
It wasn't, but we were pests.
Yes, definitely. And
Matty, I was happy to do his work. I was over the moon to do the running for him because he was such a good finisher.
Yes.
Like he was awkward. He was quick without being rapid. He was a very good finisher without looking technically good, It's a weird one. And he was such a great lad. And we buzzed off each other all the time. And I didn't mind challenging people in the air for him to take the scraps or him to get on the flick-ons. And
I think it's a partnership, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's like Andy Cole and Dwight York. They weren't huge.
Yeah.
They were. I think Andy Cole was like 5'9", and I think Dwight York was like 5'10", 5'11". We weren't too dissimilar.
We had, like you say, strikers are remembered for scoring goals. And if they're not scoring goals, they're often pilloried. One of those was, two of those while you were at the club that seemed to struggle. The wonderfully sounding Elvis Hammond and the equally bad at aiming wherever he's shooting Mark De Vries. I mean, he will always be remembered for that goal against Spurs in the FA Cup, but even that was scuffed in. I mean, and I'm not expecting you to sort of say, but did you ever look around and think, like, we're better than that?
Not at all, because those guys trained every day. And Elvis was probably the hardest player to play against.
Really?
Because he was rapid. Like, he was the fastest striker we had. He was strong as an ox.
Yeah.
And it just didn't land for him in the first team. But then Mark De Vries was unplayable. When he was good, he was unplayable. But you just didn't see a lot of it at Leicester. He went at Hearts. He would do the same thing every week. Like, he was just a beast. He was 6'3", 6'4", however many stone. Like, he was probably 110 kilos. But he wasn't a heavy 110 kilos, like a fat guy.
No.
He was just big. He was the same size as Steve Howard, maybe a tiny bit bigger in height. Same build, same style of player, just wasn't as...
No, it doesn't work out for some players, does it? You know,
he just wasn't as well rounded as Stevie was.
No. You then, how did the move? Because you then moved to the Indian, is it Indian Super League?
After that, I went to Barnsley, didn't I? So I went to Barnsley.
Yes, you did. You went to Barnsley and Preston. Sorry, my bad.
That last season with Leicester when we were fighting it and like. Ollie came into us on the last deadline, the January deadline day, and had us all sat down in the gym at the training ground. And he's like, listen, he goes, I know we're struggling. We're fighting relegation. He goes, I need to know. He goes, if you have irons in the fire and you want to leave, leave. Tell me now. We need people who are on board. Yeah. And everybody said, no, we're here. We're staying. He goes, okay, so get your agents to turn the phones off. We're all staying. We're doing this. I got in the car, so we were all obviously done for the day. I got in the car, drove up to Loughborough where I was living. And by the time I got home, like I said to my wife as we got in, because there was things about Preston coming back in. And so I'd gone to my wife and said, listen, stop thinking about it. We're not going.
Mm-hmm.
We'll revisit at the end of the year and see what's going on. And I hadn't even finished the sentence fully with her. And Andrew Neville at the time was the club secretary. Is he still there?
Andrew? No, I don't think he is now. No.
So, but Andrew called me. He goes, oh, so do you know what's happening? And I'm like, whoa, what do you mean? He goes, the chairman's accepted an offer for you. So I'm like, okay, that's news to me. He goes, yeah, Preston North End have put in an offer for you. We've accepted. So I'm like, oh, okay, let me call you back. Called Ollie. Said, Ollie, what's going on?
Yeah.
And he goes, what do you mean? I said, I've just got a call off Andrew. Milan's accepted an offer for me. Said, I thought we were all, everyone's on the ship. Like, we're not going.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll call you back in 5. So he calls me back in 5 minutes. He goes, do whatever you want. He goes, this guy doesn't give a crap about the club. He doesn't give a crap about what I'm saying to him. If you've got an offer and it's right for you and the family, go. So I'm like, no, I'm staying. I told you that. I've already told you today. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So we'll stay. He goes, okay, perfect. So I called up Preston and said, listen, I don't know if it was Billy Davis at the time, or it was either Billy Davis or no, it was Alan Irvine, actually. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Billy Davis was when I first moved to Leicester.
Yeah.
Alan Irvine was in charge, and I don't know if Rob Kelly was up there with him by then. I think he'd gone up. So Rob must have had a say in his ear about me. And I just messaged him, said, listen, not right now. I've got something to fight for. And whatever, let's revisit, see what goes on. And Ollie just lost all faith in ownership and things. Yeah. He was frustrated as hell. And then the end of the season, Preston came back in. Obviously, we'd just been relegated. And I still had another year on my contract, or another year and a half on my contract. And they just messed around a little bit. Like, they accepted like a third of the money they sold me for. So they accepted like 400,000 or something in January, and then sold me for over $1 million in the summer. But I wanted to stay. But they came into me in the off season and said, well, the contract they had on file to the contract me and my agent had on file weren't the same. It said that my wages cut in half, which happens. I know it does, but it wasn't something I was aware of myself signing. So I was content. I bought into a new mortgage in Loughborough and pumping my money into it. And I was looking for it. I still had time on my contract, and because I'd signed a new one halfway through.
So you did.
I still had 2 years left, 2.5 years left. And they're like, oh, no, well, the one we've got on file in the FA have says it cuts in half. I said, well, you've offered, and I knew because I was good friends with some of the players who were being shopped around. I said, you've offered this guy X amount of money to stay on his contract, stay and fight. I said, well, if you can do that with me, and by the way, I wasn't on massive money. I was on a lot less than others. But I'm like, if you can do the same for me, I'm staying. I've got time left on my deal. I'm happy to stay. Oh, well, we can't do that. We haven't said that to anybody. I said, that's bullshit. I said, because I know my teammate, I'm very good friends with, has told me this. And end of the day, he's like, we can't do it. I said, well, then I can't stay. I said, it is solely a financial reason I can't stay.
Yeah.
I just couldn't afford to do it. And that was, I couldn't buy out of my mortgage. I couldn't do that. My wife wasn't making money. My wife was only working part-time because of obviously my job. Yeah. So it was something I just could not do for my family. And it broke my heart doing it, but it is what it is. And I still have regrets. I should have stayed, because winning promotion the next year and then potentially getting a new contract and the new owners had come in, and it would have been perfect place to be for me.
You weren't to know, were you, though? Let's be honest. Well, none of us were to know.
That's it. And I'm happy that, like, I'm buzzing for the club the way it went afterwards, winning, and obviously Matty and Andy King and that just killing it in League One, and getting promoted, and then a couple years later missing out on playoffs and then getting promoted. And it was just incredible to watch as a, like, not gonna lie, I'm a fan because I obviously spent 3 years there. But that move to Barnsley, who knows, like, if I don't move there, does anything that happened in my career happen? Do I fracture my skull? And you never know. That was literally 14 games into my time at Barnsley.
And that must have been awful for you. Well, obviously, talk about stating the obvious, really. But, I mean, I guess you're thinking that's it, it's over for you.
Funny enough, I wasn't. You seen me playing for Leicester. You seen me playing through the years. One thing you can't tell me to do is stop. And that's it. Like, you've got to, this is what you got to do. You can't tell me what to do. You can't tell me how to play and how to work the way I worked if I had limits to it. And as soon as it happened, I was asking, like, obviously after the operation and everything, I was asking, like, how long is it going to be?
Right.
And I'm not saying, listen, I'm not saying I'm a big tough guy and all that. I'm not. It's just, I have nothing else to fall onto. I'm not at a club that's big enough that's going to give me a job for the rest of my career, or give me a coaching job right away where I'm going to make thousands and thousands of pounds a week. I have nothing else to fall onto. I don't have an education. I don't have any other trades that I'm good at. So football's my life. And it always has been, always will be. So telling me I can't play football is the wrong comment to be making to me. And I was back training. It happened in November. I was back training with the squad, or training on my own with the physio, just after New Year's. And I was back training with the squad by the end of March. So it was something that, for me, it was never a question of whether I'd be stopping playing. It's, when can I get back?
It was an elbow to the head, wasn't it? And Well, you know, because they never took any action against, I'm trying to see the guy's name, was it Chris Morgan?
Yeah.
And have you met him since? Or
well, there was a civil suit going on. A lot of people wanted it to be a criminal suit, but I didn't need that. I just needed the thing that would have changed it is if he'd apologized or come and spoke to me or like right after.
Yeah,
I never heard anything. Then when I played my first game the next preseason, I get a text message through. Congrats on, or great to see you back on the field. Hopefully we can sit down and have a beer over this sometime. That's 8.5 months later. Like, yeah. You can go float yourself. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
But we played them the year after. And it was Sky being the nice guys that they are. Put a game, Chef Wedding against Barnsley on Sky, because obviously it's my first time back on Sky and playing against them. And he's injured, or I think he was injured, I was suspended, or vice versa. And they were devastated because obviously local Yorkshire rival and
players
that you want to see going up against each other, both out the game.
Yeah.
But we played them again that year at Bramall Lane, and he was given the whole, oh, come shake my hand, make it look good for the cameras and all that. Like, do me a favor.
Yes.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But I genuinely don't care. I don't hold grudges against people for stuff like that. It was dirty as hell. He didn't mean to hurt me the way he hurt me. He meant to hurt me, but not.
I'll talk him in my next question.
Yeah, he's meant to catch me. Like, you watch anybody watches the video, he's meant to catch me, and I'm done with it. I don't care. But he didn't mean to do what he did, so I'll defend him on that front.
Yeah,
he never meant to put me in hospital. He never meant
to really
kill me. Yeah. It's not that, but whatever. It's gone, and I talk about it all the time. I'm open to all the talk about it, but I'll never place blame on him and how it, the extent that it went to.
Yeah,
but again, he retired through injury the year later. So it was kind of one of those things, and
justice there, really.
That's it. Like, I'm not going to be petty and give him a text message and say, oh, sorry to see you've had to retire, buddy. Hopefully we can have a beer over. I'm not going to do that petty stuff.
No,
I went on to play another 250, 300 games. So it's not anything that really bothered me.
Was it a bit like, I mean, I don't know if you've seen, you know, it's in the film of the story, Rush, and it was Niki Lauda when he had the accident. And it was the sport that kept him going. That was his aim. And it sounds a little bit more like, you know, with yourself, that was what you were aiming at. Oh, like, yes, he said, you know, you didn't have maybe a lot of other options, but that was your goal. You had something to actually still aim for.
Yeah, 100%. Like that football's my life. And it always has been, even from like 5 years old. All I've wanted to do is play with the ball. So you take that away from me, what happens? I'm back at square one. And it's not even about the financial reasons. It's I don't know what I'd do without football. Yeah. So I was straight on. And my first touch in the game when I came back the next year, we played against, I think it was Gainsborough Trinity in the preseason game with Barnsley. And my first touch was a header. And do you remember A.D. Moses? Big centre back.
Name rings a bell. Yeah.
He played for years, and I think he played at West Brom and played around the leagues, and towards the end he played lower leagues and all that. And he was playing at Gainsborough, and I'd played against him for years, and he welcomed me back on the field. Great to see you back out there, pal. And ball comes in the box. I jump up, go to head it. And he goes, what the hell are you doing? I said, what do you mean? He goes, what are you doing? I said, heading the ball. And he's like, you're running behind me because I'd headed it just over the bar, and we're jogging back for the goal kick and all that. He goes, you're a bloody idiot. it's something, the fact that was the first thing I did told me everything was going to be fine. And my wife will tell you different. My head's been a little bit screwed up for the last couple of years, but it was great to be back out. And it's the only thing I've ever known.
You did end up eventually at Preston, but after Preston, I do apologise, no disrespect to Barnsley or Preston, but I'm just like, you know, the Indian Super League. I mean, you know, you talk to players like they've gone to these days Saudi and, you know, America when that was going off. I mean, you had great success in India, let's be honest. You know, you put a few clubs there, you won things over there. How did that come about?
Well, Foxes fans will be happy to hear this. So it was when you guys got promoted. I was doing an interview with, I don't know if you know Andy May. He did a lot of stuff for BT Sport. He's one of the reporters for BT Sport, or he was. So he was doing some freelance stuff for, it was kind of a mix between BT Sport and our TV or our sports network over here, TSN.
Yeah.
And he's like, who better to talk to than a Leicester player who's from Canada, who obviously both sides of the pond will know who he is. So we did an interview about it. He came down and seen me in Tranmere. So we'd moved back to Tranmere when I was at Preston. And he'd come to see me. And they're like, oh, so how do you think? Like, we're going on about how I thought the Foxes would do. Do I think they'd stay up? Do I think they'd push for Europe? And I said, I'll be perfectly honest, I think they'll finish mid-table, maybe just above mid-table. I said, they've got the fundamental core of their team is set for playing in the Prem. And if they add to it, if their owners are splashing money, then they'll be fine. And then at the end of the interview and everything, he's like, have you heard about this new league in India? And I'm like, to be honest, no. And I'd never been out of contract. So this was me, my first ever time in my career.
Yeah.
Out of contract. So I was 30 years old and I'd never been out of contract. So it was weird. And I was trying to get to the MLS. I was trying to come over to Toronto or to Vancouver, Montreal, and all this pie in the sky stuff that people were saying they were interested. They never ended up showing full interest. So this one comes up and he goes, have you heard about this? And he goes, they've asked me to go out and do some punditry or some commentary work.
Yeah.
He goes, I can't do it because I'm signing into a deal with BT. And I'm like, no, I haven't. He goes, well, here, call this guy. So I give it to my agent, got him to call him up. And they're like, yeah, in a heartbeat. Like, we don't have a Canadian player in the league. We don't have an current international in the league. We this, that, the other, like, get him in. And it wasn't even money. Like, the money wasn't, and I'll be honest, it was the lowest paycheck of my career.
Right.
Like, since my first couple of years at it was the lowest paycheck of my career. But it was like, you know what? I'm 30 years old. I've played 500 plus games, and I'm fighting for a trial. I'm like, I'm not doing this. I need to get away from this. Like, there's far too many politics going on around. And that was just my feeling. And people might think it's, oh, suck it up and go on trial. Well, I would have done it if nothing would have come up. But coming up 30 years old and playing the amount of games I've played and been through what I've been through, I didn't want to do that. I was being kind of snooty about it. And so I went out there and they're like, here's the contract. Every foreign player is on this amount unless you're a marquee player. So every foreign player is on similar amount. The local players, the domestic players will be on different types, but it's a draft. So I literally went to bed and there was a draft in the morning because there's obviously, 6.5 hours, 7 hour difference. And I woke up knowing I'd been drafted to Kerala Blasters. And it ended up being, so I went out there with David James was my player coach. You had Michael Chopra went first overall, obviously being of Indian origin.
Yeah.
Big I am that they were bringing out there.
Yeah.
And then, so he went first overall. I went first in the second round. And it was weird. It was incredible, but it was weird because I ended up playing against people I'd only been near in Football Manager and FIFA.
Yeah. I mean 5 years you went. Can you remember everything you won over there?
Majority of them, yeah. So the first year I won, so I lost in the finals with Kerala. We were favorites for the Wooden Spoon.
Oh, right.
We got to the final.
Yeah.
I had a good season then. I didn't score a lot of goals, but I did what I do. Yeah. And pain in the ass to everybody around me. We got the finals and lost in the 95th minute. That year I won the player of the year. So that was voted for by the managers of all the teams and the players and whatever. And I won the foreign player of the year, which was kind of like the FA or the PFA sort of player of the year or player of the year sort of thing. So I did that. Second year, first year I was in team of the year, second year I was in team of the year, third year I was in team of the year and won the trophy. I won fittest player of the year, which is a weird trophy, but the second season I won fittest player of the year. I played every minute bar seven.
Right.
And then I was in team of the year for the first 3 years. Fourth year, I snapped my ACL. So I went back to Kerala in my fourth year and snapped my ACL just after Christmas. Right. So that was the end of my season there. And then I kind of went back for one more year at Pune or FC Pune. I didn't really play as much as I would have hoped until towards the end of the season with the recovery from my knee and everything. And then I just decided it was, you know, what I'm at the end of my wick. So I kind of wanted to go out while I could still walk. And
yeah,
I could have probably forced out a couple more years if I'd gotten the right environment and gotten the right setup. But it was one of those things, family over football.
Yeah. Mike says there, us Foxes fans loved you, Ian. And Nate, just a few questions here that were in the chat. Nate says, we talk sometimes about players from other countries coming to England and it taking time to adjust. What was it like adjusting to the culture in India and building the sport on another continent?
I absolutely loved it. I'm not going to lie. I absolutely loved it. See, I'm not a big curry eater. Like it's something I've never hidden from. I like all your meats and everything. So I went over there. So the culture, as far as the food went, I was a little bit picky with it, but everything.
I would be the same. I don't mind the curry, but a curry hates me if you get my.
Yeah, no, I get that. But that was it. First things you were told, don't drink tap water.
Yes.
And don't eat street meat.
Yeah.
So that we held them to the highest. They were like up here. Okay, we got training. We got to be here at 9 o'clock, but don't eat street meat. Don't drink tap water. So they were right up there, but, no, it was good, and it was a lot easier because it was into our contracts. We stayed in hotels, so our food was always cooked by chefs. We weren't cooking for ourselves. We had a very good group of players. We weren't the best technically with Kerala Blasters in the first year, but we had a very, very good group of guys, like incredible. The domestic players and the foreign, we were a proper team, and we would kill for each other, and that's what got us to the final. And I made it my kind of aim from the get-go was I'm not going to alienate anybody. If I'm going out, I'll go out and I'll ask the Indian players if they want to go out, if they want to go for a walk, go to a pub, watch a game, go to the pub in the hotel, watch a game. We just made sure that our team, our squad was really well knit. So that eased it for me and it eased it for them to not feel nervous around talking around foreign players. And and we didn't have any bigwigs, so we had David James, but Jamo was the coach.
Yeah,
we didn't have a, like, first season, who was there? There was David Trezeguet, there was Freddie Lundberg, Nicholas Anelka, Robert Pires, Del Piero, Capdevila, Luis Garcia. We didn't have any of those guys. We didn't have guys who were coming in with entourages and this and that, and you couldn't go near them. We were all normal people. I'm not saying we're not, but we're not the marquees. We were professionals who were playing in a professional team.
And I get what you mean. And the funny thing is that Dan did ask this earlier, and just perfect timing because I was just about to ask you this. He says, how do you as a player deal with fellow professionals who come in with an ego?
It happens. It's
and
that's any team. So any squad you're in, doesn't matter where you are. There's people from different walks of life who have different egos and different approaches to everything. And whether it be a French player, Dutch player, English player, Scottish player, Portuguese, Spanish, they're all, everyone comes in with a different mentality. And it's how do we adapt? And like, you can't find me a team in the Premier League right now who hasn't got one or a handful of egos in it.
Yeah. But
how does the rest of the squad adapt around them? And how do they accept what they do whilst obviously policing it a little bit?
Yes.
And that's it. That's literally every club I've been in, you've had people like that. and you'll have people who come in the train, go home. They won't go out for a coffee. They won't go out for a walk down the down the front or what. There's people who just don't do it.
Mm.
And it's weird because at Leicester, we didn't have that. We had a couple egos, but a lot of our team was very good friends. So a lot of them came through the youth system and all that. So we didn't have that. Then I moved to Barnsley, and majority of players, not with the ego side of it, majority of players didn't live in Barnsley. So they lived in Leeds, Sheffield, Derby, Mansfield, Manchester, Liverpool. So everyone finished training, got in the car, and pissed off.
That's why
we never really went anywhere. We were mid to lower end of the championship. We languished there for years, and it just never changed. And you get it at every club. And in India, with the egos, we had to squash that early. Even your top name Indian player, they had to make sure that everything was kind of copacetic. Everything was everyone was involved with each other. Everything was in line with each other. And it comes down to foreign players and domestic, but your older heads and just saying, listen, if we want to be successful, like, this stuff needs to happen. And I think you get that in every team.
Last ones now, and I appreciate that. This has probably gone on actually longest of any of the
conversations.
Which is brilliant. No, I mean, I could still be here at 2 o'clock in the morning if I was allowed to. But I know you've obviously got things to do. But just the last one, well, last two from Nate here. Best atmosphere you ever played in either home or away, and your favourite goal you've ever scored?
It's madness because, and I don't say this with any prejudice, playing in India was insane, and I loved it there. I was there for 5 seasons. But playing in front of 75, 80,000 people was insane. And when they're all on your side, it's even better.
Yes.
And then again, the best goal I ever scored, I scored a goal in the cup final in year two I was out there. Mm-hmm. Or the cup semifinal, sorry. Ball comes into me back to goal, flicked it round to my strike partner. He popped it up for me, and I ran on left foot volley in off the crossbar.
Yeah.
And I've got other ones that obviously meant more.
Yeah. Like
getting us through in the FA Cup with Tranmere, scored two bangers, one against Bolton, one against Swansea. Scored some great goals with Leicester. My one against Watford was up there with one of my best. I scored a couple against Southampton. I think it was that year as well, or the year before. And I'm a weird one. I enjoy every goal as much as the other.
Nothing wrong with that. And it's interesting to see that your memories are of your time in India, which is great. Says so much about you. Ian, like I said right at the start, I mean, you know, I have to pinch myself that I'm doing this and I'm talking to my heroes, and you were one of those on that pitch. I mean, I say there's been so many Humes in the chat, I can't put them all up. Really, thank you for everything you did at Leicester. And thank you so much for giving up your own time to come on here and do this. And glad everything is going so well for you over there in Canada. And probably don't blame you being over there the way things are going in this country at the moment.
It's not too dissimilar here.
Is it? Oh, God.
Yeah,
I got in my mind then, this utopia of, you know.
I wish. Cost of living's not, listen, it's not as drastic as back home, but it's not easy either. And it's frustrating a lot of people around the country, and I hope everything evens itself out and makes it a lot more.
I'm sure it will. At the end of the day, whatever happens, we haven't got, you know, missiles going off around our heads and things like that. So we have to count ourselves lucky. Like I said, there's a friend of the channel, Melina, and she's based in Toronto, I think it is. And I watched, there's a Netflix program, Don't F-E-C-K with Cats, and it's about a Canadian serial killer. So actually thinking about it, maybe it isn't any different over there.
I'm 2 hours from there, so don't worry about that. You can deal with that there.
Don't buy a cat, whatever you do, I'll tell you. It's been a pleasure, mate, and I say thank you so much for giving up your time and coming on. Really, really do appreciate it. all the best to you and your family moving forward.
Thank you very much.
Continue being a stallion.
I will do for a while. I'm just ramping it up for a season now, so we're getting ready to go and push for everything. So
that's another team I'm going to have to follow.
There
you go,
all your fans there, get following us on social media. Woodstock Stallions Prem Team.
There's nothing you've got to hate about that name, Woodstock or Stallions. I love it. We'll keep in touch. Hopefully, I'll see how the TSC follow the team. And thank you so much, and all the best to say you and your family.
Thanks again for having me on. And anytime, if you want to have a chat in the next couple of months, 6 months, a year, doesn't matter. Just fire me a text. We'll get it sorted.
We'll keep an eye. We'll have a chat about Woodstock later in the season.
Perfect.
Brilliant. Again, you're a gentleman, sir. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, thank you again.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you so much to Ian there. Really do appreciate it when these guys give up, because it's their own personal time. He's got a job. Woodstock Stallions, what a name for a football club. You can't not like it. We're going to have to do something for Woodstock Stallions, I'll tell you. We really, really are. Let me tell you what's coming up next. What's coming up next, Chris?
Coming up next on Leicester Till I Die TV.
Tomorrow night, 8:30, I'm going to be joined by Rich from Rich Sports, a huge, huge fan of Manchester United. And tomorrow night at 8:30, we're going to have half an hour's worth of stats, and then he's going to join us. Brad standing in for Craig, who is watching Nottingham Forest this week. I'm sorry. Is at the Comedy Awards. So I always get those two mixed up. So from 8:30 tomorrow, it is the match preview ahead of Manchester United. Can we keep it going? Can we keep it going? That is the question. And I've got to say, I wish I still got your picture that goes with that comment. You certainly, I don't know about being a stallion, mate, but you certainly have a midweek semi. What was it tonight? Arsenal 1, Manchester City 3. I went on, well, I didn't go on Stephen's channel earlier. Stephen Featley, do go over and support him. Does a hell of a lot for the Children's Liver Foundation. Please go and get over there and give him your support. It is such a worthwhile cause. And, you know, just go over and support him. But I was in the chat and, I went fishing, shall we say, and I got myself a huge Stephen fish. And he wasn't very happy. God knows what it'd be like now after losing to Man City 3-1. But look, see you tomorrow, 8:30. Thank you to everybody that's been watching on YouTube and on Twitch, Leicester Till I Die TV. Please give us a subscribe if you've been new. If you're not new and you're old, like Anthony, please still smash those likes buttons. I cannot keep telling you how much that helps the channel. And if you are listening to this on your favourite podcast platform, if that's Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Google, or any other, we thank you for lending us your ears. You can have them back now. Arsenal are not winning the league, Chris, says Anthony. Well, it's all going a little bit wrong. All I'll say is thank everybody listening or watching. It's Tony.
Thanks for watching. These videos are tremendous. You'd better like them too, or I'll be back.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
That's all, folks.
Thanks for watching Leicester Till I Die. This is Chris saying goodbye, and see you next time.
Thank you.
looking for Dr. Goodhead.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.